GW's Rod Hill.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Now she's looking like she wants to be more Trump than Trump.
That was from last night's interview, because President Donald Trump did a live interview on Elon Musk's social media platform X last night, and it's absolutely driving the liberals nuts. In fact, one liberal organization, a labor union, has even gone to court over what Donald Trump said last night. They're filing an unfair labor practice against Donald Trump, who, by the way, as far as I can tell, doesn't have any auto workers on his payroll. But that doesn't stop the UAW from dragging him into court and saying, why, you're discriminating against workers who don't exist, who don't draw a paycheck from Donald Trump, who are not on strike right now. But the question of strikes came up, and Donald Trump gave an interesting answer. I can't entirely disagree with him about it, but it was interesting, because that interview last night was heard by more than 1 million people who were listening at all times during the two-hour event. Now, a cyber attack delayed the start of that event, and Elon Musk says it was a deliberate DOS attack. That's denial of service. What it essentially means is that somebody attacked the event by putting in so many inquiries that it literally jammed things up, and it delayed the start of the event. That is very, very clear that the liberals in America are absolutely going nuts, even though Kamala Harris has been offered the same kind of exposure in the same kind of environment in an unfiltered interview with Elon Musk. And you know what she said? She said she has not decided to accept it at all. And why would that be? Because there are a lot of questions that somebody might ask of Kamala Harris, and I don't think she's got the answer. So Harris was offered the same kind of exposure. So far, she is not accepting the opportunity for an unfiltered interview and huge exposure to more than 1 million people, maybe even many more than 1 million people. Welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, and that's what the Lars Larson Show is all about, it's easy to do. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and answer our X poll question. And no, we don't have any financial ties to Elon Musk or to X or anything like that. But the question today is a great one. Apparently, the Big Apple, New York City, has become so dangerous that even the NYPD wants law-abiding citizens, even the ones who don't live in the state of New York or the city of New York, they want them armed. They want law-abiding citizens to be able to carry guns. So the New York Police Department has adopted an emergency rule that allows non-residents to apply for concealed carry permits through the city, a move that creates a backdoor for out-of-state residents to carry guns in the Big Apple. I think this is fantastic. So I'm going to ask you the question straight out. Should gun carry permits be limited only to those who live in a particular state? I would answer no. They should not be limited. They should be like driver's licenses. If you want to get a license and drive a car anywhere in America, you do not have to have a driver's license for all 50 states. No. All 50 states honor the driver's licenses of all 50 states. So I think New York City is absolutely right. You can find the X poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. But about the event last night, Donald Trump talked to Elon Musk. Musk could ask anything he wanted, and Trump gave, well, Trumpish answers, and I thought they were great, starting with Kamala Harris.
She is considered more liberal by far than Bernie Sanders. She's a radical left lunatic, and if she's going to be our president, very quickly you're not going to have a country anymore, and she'll go back to all of the things that she believes in. She believes in defunding the police. She believes in no fracking, zero. Now all of a sudden she's saying, no, I really want to see fracking. If they got in, the day she got in, she'll end fracking.
And you understand how significant that is. Fracking has been done in the United States since the 1960s. There are more than 160 wells, most of them gas, oil and natural gas is what fracking benefits. But in the last 20 years, fracking has brought about some of the lowest natural gas prices in American history. And why is that important? Because it's a great fuel, and the liberals absolutely hate it because it makes all of their energy plans, which pretty much can be summed up as buy solar panels, windmills, and batteries from China, as absolutely foolish. So you got that. Trump hammered on the Democrats, on the border, on inflation, on foreign policy. And he also hammered Kamala Harris for copying his idea 2 months after the fact on ending the income tax on people who get tips at their jobs.
And by the way, they had just the opposite. You know, they had not only tax on tips, but they hired 88,000 IRS agents, and many of them were assigned to go get waitresses and caddies and all of this on tips. They have a policy. They had a policy that they were really going to go after you and were really harassing people horribly. And then all of a sudden, for politics, she says, you know, she comes out with what I said, which I think is terrible. And I think it's also hitting them very hard. These people are fake.
They are absolutely fake. And in fact, I'll point out one other thing that President Trump didn't mention, although he kind of said it in passing. Kamala Harris, a couple of years ago, was the deciding vote, the tie-breaking vote in the U.S. Senate to vote for the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, that gave $80 billion to the IRS to hire those 88,000 IRS agents. And one of their new initiatives was, let's go after people who get tips. Let's apply the full tax. And you'd get a total 180 because Kamala Harris and Joe Biden have come out now and said, yeah, we sicked the IRS on people who get tips, but now we don't want any tips to be taxed under federal taxes. It makes no sense. Trump also went after Kamala Harris as the border czar.
And she never even went there. She went to one location, which had nothing to do with where the problem is. You know, she went in and out, right. I guess, because she was getting a lot of pressure, had nothing to do with the problem.
Yes.
But she was the border czar. And people can't allow them to get away with their disinformation campaign. Now she's trying to say that she wasn't really involved, and the whole thing is horrible. She was totally in charge. She could have shut the border down without him. He didn't know what he was doing anyways. He wouldn't have even known what happened. You could shut the border down. He wouldn't even know the difference.
No, he wouldn't have known the difference. And Trump made the point that all you have to do to know what Kamala Harris is all about is take one look at California.
And what she's done with crime, with cashless bail, where you kill somebody. I mean, we have states there, you kill somebody and they let you out right away. I mean, you don't have to even put up, and then they never find the people unless they kill again, and then they let them out again. Our country is becoming a very dangerous place. And she is a radical left San Francisco liberal, and now she's trying to protect. Now she's looking like she wants to be more Trump than Trump.
And I think he's absolutely right about that. About that lawsuit brought by the UAW, they now claim they have filed federal labor charges alleging that President Trump has tried to intimidate and threaten workers. Workers, by the way, UAW, that don't work for Donald Trump. And he's not the president at this point. He's the former president. He has no control over whether or not the UAW waged the strike. And frankly, I think most UAW workers are going to vote for Donald Trump. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Sometimes the listeners say it best.
Hey, Lars, love your show, and I really appreciate what you do. Boy, you cover more territory in an afternoon than a lonely badger in springtime.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say it.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
The late Portland retail icon Tom Peterson famously declared, "Free is a very good price," and he was right. But the new freebie offered up by the schools around the Pacific Northwest comes at a price too great to measure. Government-run schools in Oregon and Washington fail students miserably, with reading and math scores steadily declining, not just during the pandemic, but for more than the last decade. Meanwhile, those same schools are allocating plenty of time and resources and attention to the indoctrination of your kids on transgender equity and the belief that a kid's skin color defines him and ethnic heritage as well. Now schools in both Oregon and Washington want to offer free breakfast and lunch and sometimes even dinner for all kids, regardless of what kind of paycheck their parents make. So what's wrong with that? This means that we're telling the kids parents don't really have much say in their lives. The government provides the kids meals and their values and their indoctrination. When it comes to birth control, pregnancy, or even changing gender, we are told that parents must be kept in the dark. They have absolutely no right to know what is going on with their kids. Your government masters control your kids, and they even feed them now. Free, in this case, has a very high price. Our question of the day today comes from Don Girard, and he says, Lars, why do people that work have to pass drug testing to stay employed, but people that are on welfare don't have to pass a drug test to get free money? Also, why are they allowed to collect free money indefinitely? I understand there are mentally and physically challenged people who are recipients, but if they're working age and physically and mentally able to work, they should be able to pass a drug test. There should also be time constraints on how long and how much they can get in free money. Just my thoughts, signed Don Girard. And I want to point out something to you, but first, let me mention the numbers. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day on the Radio Northwest Network, serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with 26 great radio stations. So I saw a headline this morning that said violent crime is down. Now, they happen to be talking about Portlandia in this case. And I thought, gee, I wonder how much it's down. He said in the first 6 months of 2023, there were 41 homicides in Portland. This year, it's all the way down to 34 in the first 6 months. That means there will be about 70 in a year, or about five homicides every single month. More than one every single week. Now, how many homicides were there the first year that Ted Wheeler was mayor of the city of Portland? There were about one homicide. One homicide a month. There were about 16 the first year. There were about 20 the next year. Even if you're generous, that works out to maybe just under two homicides per month. Now we're told that the numbers are down, and we're all the way down to about one homicide a week. And we were doing two homicides a month. Yeah, violent crime's way down, down from last year and the year before, but way up from when the current administration took effect. I would imagine the numbers are similar in Seattle. 866-HEY-LARS is the number to call. 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com and vote in our X poll as well. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you coming?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I want to give two daily grills today. One goes to the 911 systems of the Northwest, which are taking incredibly long times to answer calls for help. The story is told by our friends at K2, that's the ABC affiliate in Portland. A Portland man waited on hold with 911 for almost 45 minutes to report what he thought was an emergency. And it sounds like it qualified. On Saturday this past weekend, the man, who wanted to remain anonymous, said he was driving in Portland. He saw a man passed out on the sidewalk who apparently needed help. Quote, I figured I should call somebody to see if he's okay. So I called the non-emergency line because I know Portland's been kind of sending out messages. We shouldn't call 911 unless it's a true emergency, and I'm not an expert. He says once he was transferred from the non-emergency to 911, that's when the real waiting began. He said, I got to the dispatcher and she asked me the nature of the problem. I described it to her and told her where it was, and she asked me, are you still there? And I said, no, that was 45 minutes ago. I am long gone. That's grill number one. Grill number two goes to U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. He is the junior U.S. senator from the state of Oregon, although the other U.S. senator from Oregon doesn't live in Oregon. He lives 3,000 miles away in New York City. But Senator Merkley told a crowd at a middle school that the policy of putting kids on the southern border in cages began with Trump Attorney General Jeff Sessions. That is a lie. Senator Merkley claims the Trump administration did it because they thought it would deter illegal aliens from coming to the United States. That is lie number two, and I'll describe why. Merkley claims he went to the border himself trying to find a solution. I mean, he is a U.S. senator. So far, he has not done so. Let me point this out to you. The policy of so-called kids in cages was not invented by Donald Trump or Jeff Sessions. It was invented by Barack Hussein Obama and his vice president, Joe Biden. And what did they do? Even the Washington Post, a very liberal newspaper owned by Jeff Bezos, who beat feet out of Seattle some time ago, they point out that the Obama administration took warehouses. They put in chain link fences inside the warehouses, and then they divided younger kids from older kids from others, and put the adults elsewhere. Now, that's been described, not during Obama, but during Trump, as kids in cages. And Trump has been pointing out all the way since his first campaign, when Joe Biden tried to say, Donald Trump wants to put kids in cages. No. Every single law enforcement agency in America that takes adults into custody, if there are kids who are with those adults, they separate the adults and the kids. Why? Because you can't throw kids in jail with adults. I mean, that's common sense. So where do the kids get sent? They get sent to social service workers. That applies whether it's Seattle, Spokane, Tri-Cities, Portland, Eugene, Medford. Anytime the cops encounter kids with adults and the adults have to go into custody, the kids are cared for separately and they're not housed with the adults. In any case, Merkley's out telling lies and I resent it. Now, today's email of the day, but you can send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Dan writes in from Ben listening on the network. Lars, I'm against tampon Tim Walz resigning as the Harris VP candidate. I think he's a great choice to help American voters understand the type of choices that Harris makes for critical positions. I look at the joy that was expressed when Governor Kitzhaber resigned in disgrace, when we got Kate Brown, who was 100 times worse for Oregon freedoms. I look at what happened when Cuomo resigned in disgrace in New York, and they got Hochul, who's 100 times worse than Cuomo. The joy of Kate Brown term limiting out was replaced by an even worse governor, Tina Kotek, who's even worse than Kate Brown. Thank you, Dan and Ben. It's a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars Larson Show. Portland's. If Sleepy Joe was on Jeopardy.
This man, also known as the worst president in United States history, loves ice cream, lounging on beaches, and sniffing children. Joe.
Who is me? Wait, where am I?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday, and we're live on the Radio Northwest Network, and I want to talk about Jay Inslee, his carbon tax, and whether or not he's going to be able to buy enough votes in the November election to be able to keep that carbon tax from being kicked to the curb and kicked hard by the voters of Washington State. So, Senator Mike Padden joins me, Republican of Spokane Valley, the ranking member in Washington State Senate Law and Justice Committee. Senator Padden, welcome back.
Always good to be with you, Lars.
Now, you be sure and tell me if you think I'm overstating it when I say that Jay Inslee had rolled out almost 2 months ago now, I mean, just short of 2 months ago, a $200 tax credit that looked a lot to me like Jay Inslee trying to take the people's money to bribe voters not to get rid of his carbon tax. Do you think I'm stating that too broadly?
No, I think you got it right, Lars. I mean, it was $150 million in the budget at Inslee's request. The Democrats complied, supposed to go to about 20% of all utility customers in the state $200. And not only are they just giving them the money and, you know, be happy, the utilities are forced to indicate a statement with that in the bill saying that Washington's climate action efforts by putting cap and invest dollars to work are reducing climate pollution, creating jobs, and improving public health. So, I mean, this is propaganda paid for by the taxpayers to try to buy votes. And I'm sure, as your listeners know, Initiative 2117 is going to be on the ballot. The people got the signatures because they were concerned with this hidden gas tax. The price of gas has gone up as much as 50 cents a gallon throughout the state, and impacts not just gas, but the whole supply chain and all sorts of other costs that everyday citizens incur.
And by the way, the low-income, low-to-moderate-income people who are going to receive this assistance, if they request it, they may be the least affected by the tax itself. I mean, those of us who drive on a regular basis, fill up our tanks, and we see that high price, and all you have to do is drive from Spokane Valley out to Post Falls to find much cheaper gas right across the border. And if you wonder why it's more expensive in Washington, the Climate Commitment Act carbon tax is part of that. So he's going to send the money to the people least affected by the carbon tax. They're having to peel the least amount of money out of their pockets, but they're getting money back. And is that even a legitimate use of that money to say, let's bribe some people and see if we can get the votes? What does that have to do with the climate commitment?
Yeah, not in my mind at all. And then the forced promotional language for his scheme here. And the fact is, Lars, even the low-income people, this isn't going to cover the cost of the Climate Commitment Act to them.
Nope.
They figure an average of $1,000 a year per household, so they get $200 back now and then pay the additional difference, the $800. In the meantime, all the other 80% are going to be paying the entire cost of $1,000 a year. So it's a bad deal. People have an opportunity in November to vote yes. Remember, on all four of the initiatives, vote yes, pay less.
Well, and by the way, I signed the petition when it was still petitions. I plan to vote and will vote for 2117, and I encourage everybody else to vote yes on as well and kick this to the curb. But the fact that they're taking this action, does this tell you that Inslee and company, which in which I include Bob Ferguson as well, that they're scared to death because they know what the voters are likely to do with this thing?
Well, I think you're right, Lars. I mean, they've raised an unbelievable amount of money, so who knows what the media and what all the paid advertising from special interests are gonna do. But the polling has shown that the initiative is popular with the people and would pass.
Now, I want to know this. You heard about the scam that both the state of Washington and not Inslee as much, but Ferguson pulled last week when they showed up in front of the Supreme Court and there was an effort to try to kick that initiative and three others off the ballot. Thankfully, and I was actually stunned that the normally notoriously liberal Washington Supreme Court said no to kicking all those initiatives off. But Ferguson kept it a secret, didn't even bother to tell Let's Go Washington or Brian Haywood that this lawsuit was going on, even though Haywood and Let's Go Washington were very, very involved or should have been very involved in this. And they kept it from them until the last minute. I want you to tell my audience what they should make of the fact that the guy running for governor, Ferguson, kept it a secret from the very people most affected by that lawsuit and thankfully lost, but it wasn't for lack of trying on Ferguson's part.
Yeah, I mean, it's a violation of trust. It's unethical, in my view, to do that. And you always get notices of what's going on, but to have that is a surprise. And the other guy, of course, that should have been notified is Representative Jim Walsh, the sponsor of the initiative. So it really calls into question the character of Ferguson. And do you trust this person to be your governor? I'm amazed. I mean, it is so out of the ordinary, regardless of how contentious the legal battles are. Notice is always considered a kind of a sacred trust that the whole legal profession adheres to.
Yeah, except for Bob Ferguson, the current attorney general and wannabe governor. I'm talking to Senator Mike Patton, Republican of Spokane Valley. And by the way, I'd be glad to talk to any Democrat. We've invited them on before. But is anybody in the mainstream media putting Ferguson's feet to the fire on this and asking him not just about the, this bribe to try to affect people's votes on 2117, but also Bob Ferguson's chicken and tuna checks, which seem like they're part of the same pattern.
Yeah. I got one of those checks, Lars. And
lucky you, I didn't get one.
Yeah, I guess our family eats a lot of tuna fish. I don't know. But amazing. That's why they call him Fishy Ferguson.
Yeah, no kidding. But nobody's asking him about this. You'd think that if the press corps was actually doing its job, they'd say, let's go hammer Bob Ferguson and say, why were you sending out those checks? Why did you contract with an outside agency to give you the list of people who would get those checks? Because I think they were politically targeted. And what do you make of the fact that Governor Inslee seems to be spending $150 million to try to affect the outcome of an election on the initiatives?
Yeah, all we can do is expose it and appreciate being able to come on your program and talk about this. Because, like you say, the media doesn't seem to care about it. So we encourage all your listeners to tell their friends and neighbors, hey, your tax dollars being used for political propaganda by the governor.
And by the way, the next time Haywood's on, because he's been nice enough to come on, unlike the Democrats who don't, I'd love to see him sponsor a school choice initiative. Can you imagine? Do you think that parents out there would not vote for school choice if they were actually given that choice? Although I'm sure the Democrats will yank that one right into the courts if they do. But wouldn't it be great to have school choice right now when the public schools are failing students so badly?
Well, that's right. And they even oppose choice within the public school system. They have targeted the charter schools, and they have never gotten what they were supposed to get under the initiative. The numbers are less, and they're always fighting off efforts from the teachers' union to minimize their impact. And yet they've been very successful, especially for low-income people. There's waiting lists of people that want to get into the charter schools.
Absolutely right. That's Senator Mike Patton from Spokane Valley. And as I said, I'll entertain naysayers or Democrats. If they want to talk about why 2117 should be voted down, I'm going to vote yes.
Plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. This segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. Now, our X poll today, should gun carry permits be limited to only those who live in a particular state? Well, up till now, it's been very difficult for people who live outside of New York State to be able to get a concealed carry permit. And California is much the same way. You literally can't get a carry permit in California unless you are a California resident who has lived there for a period of time. They only changed that a few years ago because I remember visiting Chico, California, and Paradise, California, before it burned down. And I was talking to the local sheriff, and he said, you should come down sometime. We'll get you through the tests and all that to get a carry permit. And then a few years later, I was visiting Paradise again before it burned to the ground. And I talked to the sheriff and I said, I need to get down here and get that carry permit. And he said, I'm sorry to tell you this. It's not legal anymore. You can't have one unless you live in the state. Well, what has New York State done? And New York City in particular, the Big Apple has become so dangerous that even the NYPD wants law-abiding citizens to be armed. And I think this is a good thing. So they have adopted an emergency rule. Apparently there was some haste about this that would allow non-residents of New York State to apply for a concealed carry permit throughout New York City. Now, why do you suppose they're doing that? Could it be the fact that New York City has now become a very dangerous place? Once again, I'm going to point out to you, Donald Trump, when he first ran for president, one of the parts of his personal campaign platform was that he was going to seek from the United States Congress concealed carry reciprocity. And yeah, it's a complicated way of saying it. What it means is that if you wanted to get a carry permit and you get it in one state, then the carry permit works in every other state in America. And if you say, well, that's crazy, Lars, you can't have a carry permit issued by Washington or Oregon that can apply in other states. Well, Washington and Oregon concealed carry permits do apply in about five other states. Idaho is one of them. But the rest of the country, they don't apply. And you say, well, hold on. How about driver's licenses? If you get a driver's license in Oregon or Washington or Idaho, that driver's license works everywhere else in America. All the other states recognize it. And if you say, but they have different requirements in every state. Now, they aren't giant differences, but I, a few years ago, actually took a close look at this. Different states have different rules about how you get a driver's license. They're all relatively similar, but they're not the same. But even still, if you get a driver's license in Oregon, can you drive to Mississippi? Can you drive to Iowa? Can you drive to Florida? Absolutely you can. In fact, I think people would think it was crazy if you had to sit down with a map every time you went on vacation and said, well, I'm planning to drive to Nebraska. I wonder if my driver's license will work as I'm going through, say, Colorado and Wyoming. And the answer is, of course it works. How about my carry permit? No, not so much. So, should carry permits be limited to only those who live in a particular state? My answer to that is no. I think New York City is taking exactly the right measure to try to deal with crime. Arm up some of the law-abiding citizens, and the criminals will become less dangerous automatically. You can find today's X-Poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's X-Poll, I asked you, should Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota drop out as Kamala Harris VP nominee over his stolen valor crimes? And there's no question in my mind, having looked at the federal law, having looked at what Governor Tim Walz has said and done, that he has committed the federal crime of stolen valor. Do I expect that the Biden DOJ is going to bring federal charges against him? Not ever. Do I think that any other authorities will bring charges against him, like, say, the U.S. attorney from Minnesota? I don't think that's going to happen either. But an interesting vote on this one, I said, yeah, he should drop out. And so did 79% of you. But 21% of you said, no, he should still carry on as the VP nominee. Now, I suspect that some of that is a little bit on the selfish side, and here's why. Because Kamala Harris has picked somebody as her VP nominee who is exceptionally toxic. And I think that's going to work to Donald Trump's favor. But I just look at what the law says and whether or not what he did was right. He claimed he retired as a command sergeant major. He did not. He claimed that he stood up and honored his commitment to the National Guard, where he served for 24 years. He did not. The minute they said, we're going to deploy your unit to Iraq, he said, I'm out of here. I'm running for Congress. I quit. And that's what he did. And he knew that they were calling up his unit to go to Iraq. And he said, I'm not going. Do I think that's an honorable thing to do? I do not. Now, one other thing I want to mention very quickly. We're actually seeing a man from Honduras being extradited to the United States to face fentanyl dealing charges, a conspiracy charge. As though we don't have enough illegal aliens trafficking drugs in America, now we're going to bring one of them back to be tried on one count of conspiracy to distribute fentanyl. That one doesn't make sense to me, but maybe somebody will explain it. You're listening to Tuesday on the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to get to your calls, and especially to a naysayer, because I love naysayers on this program. But I want to suggest this to you. Would it surprise you a lot if some of the biggest corporations, which are preaching about climate change, about the need to cut back CO2, and to say we have to make sure that we make a commitment to Earth's environment and Earth's climate, that those very people are, at least the elites at the top of those companies, are not actually acting on their, you know, in a way that would actually say they're walking the walk and talking the talk. Rules for thee, but not for me. And that's what applies to the elite jet setters. But let me get into the details of that story in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And as always, naysayers go to the head of the line. You can send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. If you want to take part by voting in our poll on X, you can find it on social media on X at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Before I do anything else, I want to talk to my first naysayer, and that's Tim. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program. You know we love naysayers, so what is it that you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Yeah, Lars, you seem to think that or say that Trump has a fairly easy route to the White House, and I would say that the odds are very heavily stacked against him. There's the 13 keys that Nostradamus of elections came out with. He's predicted, I think, almost every election correctly since 1984. And Kamala, honestly, the Democrats have pulled a masterclass strategy as far as pulling Biden out and putting kind of she's been closeted for the last 4 years. It almost gives them a fresh record, and they're winning on a lot of those key points right now. I would probably give her a 90% chance of winning just on a technical perspective.
Only one small correction, and that is, Tim, I've never said it's going to be an easy road for Donald Trump. I have not. What I have said is I believe he will win. I've never used the term easy or it's going to be a cakewalk or anything along those lines. So please don't overstate what I've said. But I also think that even with Kamala Harris running, Joe Biden was going to run the basement strategy that he did the last time. And it didn't work out well then. They had to cheat to get him across the finish line. Do I believe they'll try to cheat with Kamala Harris? Yeah, I do. And I believe they pulled him out because they knew that they were going to lose with Joe Biden. They know, the Democrats know, that they're likely to lose with Kamala Harris. But never have I said that it's going to be an easy road, because I know they're going to cheat. And I know that the mainstream media is going to carry water for Kamala Harris all day long. But when you say she doesn't have much of a record, actually, she has a quite definable record of both public statements as vice president on a whole bunch of different issues. And of course, her actions during the campaign 4 years ago, actions like raising bail money for violent criminals to put them back on the streets, her positions on Medicare for all, which has gigantic consequences for the United States. The fact that she appears right now to be doing a complete 180 on fracking and the oil industry, which Joe Biden did to some extent as well. I mean, Joe Biden, almost 3 years ago now, declared in a State of the Union address, in 10 years, America won't even be using oil anymore. And that was such a laugh line that even the Republicans who were standing there during this joint session of the House and the Senate, they laughed out loud at the idea. I mean, you can't talk to anybody who's serious about America and say, oh, we're not going to use oil in 10 years. It's all going to be replaced by something else. I mean, before you even get to the question, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, Lars, I think there's one thing that you're ruling out, and it's that I'm a millennial, and a lot of my friends, I've got a lot of moderate friends, I'm in Portland, a lot of them are left of center. A lot of them were saying, I don't even care who wins. Both of these presidents running are so senile that Kamala just coming in with her age alone has actually activated a lot of my friends that are very different politically from me. But I think she's going to summon up an entire crowd of 30 under that are going to show up to the polls. And so when she wins in November, I'm giving it a 90% chance. I don't think, you know, you can say this, that, or the other. A bunch of it's sentimental, in my opinion. I'm looking at it objectively. I genuinely think when Trump was, that attempted assassination happened, all the momentum was in his favor. And I think the Democrats pulled off a strategic masterclass just as far as shifting the momentum right back into their favor.
Tell me this, though. Do your millennial friends really think that a woman who celebrates her 60th birthday, I believe it's this month, that she's 60 years old, that she's dramatically younger than Trump, number one. Number two, if they've spent even 5 minutes listening to Trump and they say he's senile, I don't know of anybody who could listen to Trump speak and say, no, he's senile, just like Joe, he doesn't make sense. And then if any of your millennial friends are impressed by Kamala Harris, who can't seem to complete a sentence without saying something stupid, and she's 60 years old, and they're impressing her because of her youth and vigor?
I'm not disagreeing there. I mean, I point them to the video of Trump who went golfing with a famous golfer recently, and I think they both together did an under 50 on an 18 hole. Very impressive. I mean, obviously, he's got a very, very physically there. But I mean, I think it's just the quick, we've got somebody that's 60. I think it's kind of that nice, we live in the social media age where those quick, nice little facts that somebody can get excited about. I think it's, for whatever reason, I think it's activated a lot of people my age. I'm not one of them, but I genuinely think the tides have turned in favor of her.
I don't know how many of your millennial friends watched the interview last night with Musk, but I mean, for anybody who can clock through dozens of different major policy issues, and he doesn't sound like a professor, you know, he comes off as a regular guy who says, hey, there's this problem, here's how I'd solve it, and there's that problem, and he has very definable ideas. Do you think any of your friends can look at Kamala Harris and say, oh, I know exactly what she plans to do about this or that or the other thing? Because there are days that my producers and I will sit and listen to a piece of tape of Kamala Harris talking about something, you can't figure out what she means. Whereas Donald Trump, at least, even if you don't like his ideas, you at least know what it is he's proposing. He says, let's drill, baby, drill. Let's have all the energy supplies we can get, nuclear, oil, natural gas, and solar and wind, but let's do what makes sense, and let's go for all of it. If you listen to Kamala Harris, do you know even whether she's for fracking or not? Because she's taken a position that fracking would be immediately banned under her, but now she seems to be backing off of that. She's like a person who, you know, if you don't like her opinion, wait 5 minutes, it'll change.
That's exactly what a lot of people my age love. They like the wallflower, not offensive, doesn't stir the pot too much. And unfortunately, we might have a president that does just that, can flip a chameleon, I guess is what you could call it.
Kamala Chameleon is a good way of describing it. Somebody where you never know exactly where she stands on anything. If that applies or appeals to millennials, that's a big disappointment. Fine to be with you. Fine to get to your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. With those.
Learn. Lars wants a job for any American who wants one, with one exception.
It's time to tell Crooked Joe Biden, you're fired.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I mentioned that there are people out there who run gigantic companies, and in this case, I'm going to focus on one where the name is familiar literally to people all over the planet. It's Nike. And yet Nike, which is one of the companies that really, really doubles down hard on the question of climate, because they say we have to have a commitment to the climate, that the climate crisis demands urgent action, and that we're doing everything we can to try to benefit old planet Earth because we don't want to contaminate it with a whole bunch of carbon dioxide. Now, would it surprise you at all that a company like Nike that has that public appeal, because they know that it helps sell the shoes that they make, shoes that, by the way, are mostly made on the other side of the planet, and they have to be shipped all the way around the planet to get to their customers here in the United States. Now, I realize they have customers elsewhere. They don't, for the most part, with a few very, very rare exceptions, specialty shoes, they don't make any shoes in the United States. So virtually 100%, it might be 99.5% of their shoes are actually made on the other side of planet Earth, and they are shipped all the way to where they are sold and worn here in the United States. So they're pushing this climate nonsense, which I do think it's nonsense. But at the same time, in the behavior of their top executives, they do not hold to the climate message, not one little bit. And I'm going to give you the particulars to understand how that works. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join what we call, and I think we live up to it, the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. I get a lot of them, but I try to respond to all of them. You can also vote in our poll on X. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show. And at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me get to Nike, because I have no particular dog in the fight with Nike. I don't wear Nikes. There's a reason for that. I don't like the company. I don't like a lot of its decision making. I don't like some of the political messages that they send. I mean, supporting people like Colin Kaepernick and others who take a knee, when the national anthem is played. I don't like that stuff. And I decided a long time ago that while I had worn Nikes years ago, I'm not exactly the biggest athlete in the world, but I wore Nikes for a time. And I said, I don't want to buy their products anymore because of that. But here's another example. So they're out there preaching this message. And in fact, they're Nike executive chairperson of the board is a guy by the name of Mark Parker. I don't know Mark Parker at all. Never met the guy. And they have a CEO, and his name is John Donahoe. And this pair is a real couple of hypocrites as far as I'm concerned. So what did Parker say in Nike's 2019 corporate responsibility report? He said, it's about leading with actions, not words. We are more committed than ever before to help save the planet. He actually said that in a company video that was produced about 2 years ago. So this is a relatively fresh message from Nike. We believe in saving the planet, and we believe it's not just words, but we actually have to take actions to make this happen. And yet, how do they actually behave? Well, let me point this out. The company's information, which is publicly available, they're a publicly owned company. They're owned by stockholders. Last year, their jets emitted about 20% more carbon dioxide than they did a decade ago. Now, how do we know that? We know that from their publicly available documents, which every public company has to publish. They have to tell you how they're spending their money. It's pointed out by Eric Carter, writing at ProPublica, which is, relatively speaking, a left-wing journalism organization. And yet, they're going to hold Nike to its responsibility. So why is it that their jets were putting out 20% more carbon dioxide than they did a decade ago? It's because they're burning more fuel. And how are they burning that fuel? What urgent business need is there that they have to have people flying around? Well, it turns out that their brand new CEO, a relatively new CEO, John Donahoe, he actually owns a home in the San Francisco Bay Area. Probably a nice place. I mean, he makes a lot of money. Okay, good for him. If he negotiated a good deal with Nike, bully for him. But he works out of the Nike World Campus in Beaverton, Oregon. So how do you have a job in the San Francisco Bay Area, 800 miles away from the company's headquarters? And the answer is, you have a private jet at your disposal, not one that you pay for, but a Nike company jet. So what happens? Nike jets land at a nearby airfield about 30 minutes drive away from John Donahoe's home, according to this piece in ProPublica, more than 100 times in the first 3.5 years that Donahoe worked at Nike. So, sounds perfectly sensible. He takes a job 800 miles away from where he lives, and he does buy a condo in the area, so he's not sleeping in a cardboard box down by the river. But then he gets to fly back and forth on a corporate jet. Now, I remember when the mainstream media went crazy, when then-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger of California, who had a home on the coast, but he went to work in Sacramento, and he actually paid for his own private jet to fly back and forth. But for Donahoe, even better when you can negotiate a deal where the company actually pays for the jet. So they stopped there. And then they stopped in July of last year, but became even more frequent at an airport that was even, well, in the same general area so that he could drive to his actual home in Portola Valley, California. Now, this is despite the fact that the company's official position is, we are to lead with actions, not words. And we are going to try to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. So let me give you a couple of examples from Eric Carter's piece in ProPublica. In July, a Nike jet flew to San Jose, California, and then back to its home base 800 miles away. It then took off 2 days later and flew to Idaho. He, John Donahoe and his wife, were photographed at a conference, Allen and Company conference in Sun Valley, for an annual gathering that has been dubbed the Summer Camp for Billionaires. He also has some vacation spots. Mark Parker owns a home in Cape Cod, but he works on the West Coast. So he has a vacation home on the East Coast, and he works on the West Coast. So how does he get back and forth? Well, Nike jets have been traveling back and forth. Since 2020, the airplanes have landed near Cape Cod at least 15 times in the last 4 years. So when the boss needs to get away, even though he says we should lead with actions, not with words, you just hop in the company jet and you fly 3,000 miles to your vacation home. You have your vacation and then you fly 3,000 miles home. They've also touched down, according to this piece by Eric Carter, in the Cayman Islands at least 6 times in the last 3 years. So the question is, when Nike preaches to the rest of us, we've got to save the planet. Everybody should do their part. Lead with actions, not with words. Is Nike actually doing that? It really sounds like they're not. It sounds like it's rules for thee, but not for me. And if you're a corporate executive, you can lecture all the little people out there and tell them you shouldn't be driving your car. You shouldn't be jumping on a plane and flying elsewhere to go on vacation, even if you are wearing Nikes. But we're going to do exactly that. It seems like rank hypocrisy to me. 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. This is the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Introducing the Greek god of lousy economics, open borders, and falling upstairs.
I am Joe Bidenopoulos.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails on the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to dial in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and cast a vote if you can take just a moment. Cast a vote. Doesn't cost anything. Might be habit forming. Should gun carry permits be limited only to those who live in a particular state? New York City has now decided to make it a whole lot easier for law-abiding people to carry a gun by adopting an emergency rule allowing non-residents of the state to apply for concealed carry permits, which were very difficult to get before. I think it's a great idea. You can find today's X poll at Lars Larson Show, and always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. It's a real pleasure to welcome back my colleague in media, Brandi Cruz, host of the Undivided podcast. Brandi, how's life treating you right now?
Oh, it's going good. Hello, friend. More than colleagues. Friends at this
friends.
Point.
I think that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I'm not friends with Bob Ferguson, though, and I'm very angry at him. And I'm angry at the mainstream media, the legacy media, who don't seem willing to go to this guy and say, why did you try to do a stealth attempt to sabotage four citizen initiatives signed by a grand total of, I think it's 1.2 million people, but more than 400,000 on each one, to put it on the ballot? And Ferguson tried to basically throw the match in front of the Washington Supreme Court and allow the Supreme Court to torpedo them. And I want you to comment, too, on the rather surprise, I found it surprising, result that the otherwise notoriously liberal Washington Supreme Court said, no, you can't throw those off the ballot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of elements to this that shock me in terms of the media not being willing to call a spade. So, you know, this came out late Friday that the state Supreme Court was going to rule on a case that could undermine all the initiatives. And we didn't even know about it. Let's Go Washington, which is behind the initiatives, didn't even know about it. And it was like, well, how is that possible? And it's because, in my opinion, the Attorney General's office chose to not let them know about it, because technically the suit was against the Secretary of State's office. It was challenging, as you know, the actual way in which they counted the signatures to see if there were enough. But, you know, I mean, if you in a case like this, it would be very typical to make sure anyone who had a substantial interest in the outcome of the case was notified.
Yep.
Now, the Attorney General's office literally argues in their legal briefs, because they can't claim to know. They can't claim ignorance in terms of Let's Go Washington not knowing. They knew Let's Go Washington was in the dark because they wrote about it in their own legal briefs.
You broke this story. You deserve all kinds of credit for this. But how is it they ended up arguing that, saying, hey, we kept these people in the dark and they were the folks who put them on the ballot to begin with?
It's fascinating, because what they argue is that they said, you know, we know full well that Let's Go Washington hasn't been informed of this lawsuit, but they argue it was the job of the plaintiffs to inform them. They genuinely argue that in their own legal briefs. They say that it was the job of Defend Washington to inform Let's Go Washington. They failed to do that. And my thought is, like, let's say that's true. Let's say, from a legal perspective, Defend Washington, which is the very progressive group trying to undermine these initiatives, let's say, legally speaking, it was their obligation. Who cares whose obligation it is, legally speaking? Defend Washington doesn't represent the people of this state. Bob
Nope.
Ferguson does. And I don't care if it was his legal obligation. He knew Let's Go Washington wasn't aware of the lawsuit, and he should have picked up the phone and said, hey, there's this lawsuit. You know, we're defending it as well as we can. We just think you ought to know about it. And he chose not to do that.
By the way, just to make this point really clear, Brandi, not that you haven't already, but let's say Bob Ferguson, as Attorney General, was defending a case in which Planned Parenthood would be deeply affected by the outcome of the case. Do you have any doubt in your mind that Bob Ferguson, this corrupt Attorney General who wants to be governor, and I'll call him corrupt, that he wouldn't have immediately picked up the phone, called the folks at Planned Parenthood, and said, hey, this is in your lane. It's going to affect you. I want to let you know about it. He would have, wouldn't he?
Oh, he would have put out a statement. He would have had a press conference. He would have put it all over X, 100%. This is a guy who loves attention for everything he's doing. But in this case, it was top secret. Couldn't let anybody know about it. I'd also say, like, let's say the mainstream news won't bite at that apple, right? Where they're like, well, that's subjective. He didn't actually have to let anyone know. And, you know, he won the case anyway, right? He won the case, so the initiatives are fine, and that's going to be their argument. But there's something more nefarious, in my opinion, that has to do with corruption. You can call it corruption. I'm going to call it corruption, because First of all, Bob Ferguson's on the record opposing all of the initiatives that are going to be on the ballot in November.
Yep.
He opposes them.
Yep.
So why in the world would he not recuse himself from defending those initiatives in court? And I'll take it a step further. Defend Washington, this group that brought this lawsuit. The number one donor to Defend Washington is Nick Hanauer.
Yep.
And it's through his group. I think it's called something Civic Ventures is the number one donor. Well, the founder of Civic Ventures is Nick Hanauer. Who is Nick Hanauer contributing to in the race for governor? Bob Ferguson. So not only is Bob Ferguson's office defending initiatives that he is on the record saying he doesn't support, but he's defending the state against a lawsuit brought about, funded by one of his biggest campaign contributors. Isn't that a conflict of interest
yes.
at the very least?
Yes, all day long. All day long and twice on. And that's the thing. Because when something like this happens, I don't want to just get even. I want to get justice. And I almost wonder whether or not it'd be worth filing, say, a bar complaint against Bob Ferguson. Because any attorney worth his salt knows, or any client. I mean, I know that if I call a law firm and say, hey, I'd like you to represent me in this case, if I know they're already representing the other side, even if it's some other lawyer within the firm, I know the whole firm is conflicted out of representing the other side. To that. Isn't that, you know, law school 101?
You would think so. Again, it's a very clear conflict of interest. If he was an honest man, he would say, hey, you know, the AG's office would typically defend the Secretary of State. We can't do it in this case because there's all these conflicts, and maybe I can step, because again, he's going to go back to, well, we won the case. What are you whining about? You know, but what if I just go to, it doesn't matter, first of all. And two, what if you hadn't? What if this happened undercover? And all these voters who support these initiatives found out on a Friday at 5 p.m. that the state Supreme Court had just sent this issue back to the Secretary of State's office. Then you would have had this all of these questions, rightfully or not, about whether Bob Ferguson was in cahoots. You know, there would have been all these conspiracies and maybe justified ones about, like, well, maybe the Secretary of State's office miscounted on purpose and Bob Ferguson gave us a poor defense because he doesn't support them. So he put his own office and his own reputation on the line by being involved in a lawsuit that he should have recused himself from.
Well, and by the way, Brandy, is it more accurate to say he won the case or more accurate to say the Supreme Court looked at it and said, we are not going to throw four citizen initiatives with more than 400,000 signatures each and a grand total of 1.2 million signatures. We're not throwing that out. Did he win or did the court just look at it and say, no, that we're not going to do that?
Well, I actually think the court had some political motivations, if I can get real deep into the weeds quick on this. Because when you think of the underlying argument here, so here you have this progressive group, and yep. what they were challenging and saying is basically, oh, the Secretary of State's office didn't do enough to confirm that these were valid voters. They didn't do enough to confirm the address on file, match their, you know, voter registration and all of this, which is a conservative argument, like for voter ID laws, you know? And so I think this progressive court realized that if we invalidate this process, aren't we basically saying that the state ought to do more to confirm, you know, the validity of voters and ballots that are cast? And
absolutely right. That's Brandy Cruz, host of the Undivided Podcast. Brandy, thanks so much, and congrats on breaking that great story last week. You got the Lars Larson. With everything going.
Lars has a face for radio?
He's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I want to tell you about something weird that happened at the White House yesterday. It involved not only the White House, it involved Karine Jean-Pierre, KJP, as she's known, the press secretary for Joe Biden, who's a little bit of old news at this point because, yes, he's running around. In fact, right now he's handing out millions of dollars of your money in grants to cure cancer. I mean, he's trying to
by the Democrat Party some kind of slot to get them to a winning position by November the 5th. But what's weird is this. I've told you already that you had Elon Musk and President Donald Trump in an unfiltered interview for 2 hours last night. Now, I tried to play the conservative side of this. At all times during that 2 hours, there were at least 1 million people who were taking part in that. Now, they weren't the same 1 million at all times, but at least 1 million. That's one way of stating how many people actually in some way sampled some of the two hours last night. You also had periods of time during that 2 hours when as many as 60 million people were watching the interview on X between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. So that's another way of describing its size. And Musk is now saying that roughly 1 billion impressions were made. Now, an impression could be somebody takes a look at your website and then they move on to something else. Or they stop and they read or watch some of it. Now, what's really bizarre, and I say this because I've always been a big believer in the First Amendment and the fact that it limits government's ability to infringe on the press, to infringe on your free speech or my free speech. Because you have to remember, this was written a couple of hundred years ago. I don't know that they ever could have imagined that someday there'd be things like social media and the internet and websites and all the rest of that. But they wrote a durable First Amendment. They said the government has to understand the people have God-given rights to self-expression. That applies to everybody in this country. So we're different than, say, Great Britain, where there's currently a woman who's just been sent off to prison because she posted something on social media that the government disapproves of. Not something dangerous. I mean, if you go out and do things that are actually dangerous, like you incite to riot or you create a situation that poses a life safety risk to people, you could make the argument that some kinds of free speech, and inciting to riot is a good example, where all free speech is not the same. Some of it actually can be criminal, but it's very limited what can be criminal. So the plans were made to have an interview last night between Elon Musk and Donald Trump live streamed to as many people who wanted to take part. Now, Musk has alerted us and did last night to the fact that there was a denial of service attack, a cyber attack on the broadcast, if you can call it a broadcast, and that slowed down the beginning of it. It delayed it for about 40 minutes. But yesterday, in the White House briefing room, with Karine Jean-Pierre presiding as the press secretary for Joe Biden, she was actually asked by a reporter who happens to work for one of the most liberal newspapers in America. It's Jeff Bezos' paper, The Washington Post. And the man's name who asked the question is Cleve Woodson. He's a reporter for The Washington Post. I want you to listen to the bizarre question that he asked of Karine Jean-Pierre.
I think that misinformation on Twitter is not just a campaign issue. It's a, you know, it's an America issue. What role does the White House or the president have in sort of stopping that or stopping the spread of that or sort of intervening in that?
Intervening in that. I mean, this goes right to the heart of the First Amendment. This is a guy for one of the biggest newspapers in America, the Washington Post, asking the spokeswoman for the president of the United States, what role does the White House have in shutting down an interview between a former president and a current candidate for president and Elon Musk, a private citizen, an American citizen, by the way, African-American, but he's an American citizen. What role does the White House have in shutting that down or intervening in that? Now, maybe it just shows the fact that I'm an old guy, but I remember as a reporter, there was a time where anybody in the press understood that any time the government intervened and tried to silence any voice, that the press had a role. Number one, their role was to report that and not to support it, not to say, hey, couldn't you shut this thing down so nobody has to watch this interview between Elon Musk and Donald Trump? But number two, if the government said, we think there may be misinformation come out of Donald Trump's mouth or Elon Musk's mouth, and we want to make sure that misinformation does not touch the gentle ears
of 350 million Americans that the White House would even presume, or that a reporter would presume, that the White House has a role in shutting down that free speech? I mean, we're in an entirely different era, because there was a time when TV networks, radio networks, and newspapers all understood that if you let the government come in and shut down somebody else's free speech, you're going to be next on the list. Except in this case, it's not the media saying, or the press saying, we want to make sure that free speech is allowed. This is Cleve Woodson working for Washington Post and its owner, Jeff Bezos, a very liberal guy, saying, can't you shut this down? Isn't there a role that you have to play in making sure that Donald Trump does not speak misinformation that goes out to all the people watching on X? It's absolutely a bizarre time in First Amendment history. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
All right.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. So you've got Kamala Harris, and I'm sure Tim Walz will jump into this as well. And you've got other Democrats on Capitol Hill who are attacking Donald Trump and saying, well, it's his fault that we ended up with kids in cages. That was the derogatory way of describing the way that kids are separated from some of the adults who've come across our border, our southern border especially, and they're accompanying adults. And when Homeland Security, meaning CBP and ICE, take them into custody, of course they don't lock the kids up in the same kind of detention or the same detention as the adults are locked up. And this was actually, the situation was created under the administration of Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And that was years ago. And Donald Trump, for the most part, inherited that. And if I'm wrong about any of that, I know that Laura Reese will correct me. She's a senior research fellow for Homeland Security at Heritage, former acting deputy chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security. Laura, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Boy, this makes me mad, because I'm seeing, I saw one U.S. senator in particular, Jeff Merkley, who said, well, you know, Trump put the kids in cages, and the reason he did it is because they believe that if they put the kids in cages, that that would deter people from coming illegally into the United States. There's so much wrong with that, because it wasn't created by Trump. It was created by Barack Obama, was it not?
Yeah, the pictures that are used of children aliens in immigration detention centers or processing centers did come from the Obama administration. But no matter what administration we're talking about, when lots of aliens show up at the border and need to be processed, they are in some sort of center, whether it's adults, children, etc.
Right.
And if aliens are going to be held longer than just processing, then we're not going to house children with adults. Now, you can hold family units together, and that is advisable. That has been the recommendation of staff from both Republican and Democrat offices. And who was it that has shut down a lot of the family detention centers? That would be the current administration, Biden and Harris. They would rather have children who are encountered by CBP just simply released. And where do they end up? A lot of them end up in sex trafficking and child labor violation conditions.
So you've got this old clip from 2019, where Kamala Harris said, if I end up, you know, in the job, when she was running to be the nominee, the presidential nominee, not as Joe Biden's vice presidential nominee, she said, I intend to close all those facilities down. Well, if you close them, what do you do with those kids at that point? Because their parents, or the people who claim to be their parents, and that's another issue that we have to talk about, when the parents are taken into custody, what do you do with the kids if you close those facilities?
Right, and that's exactly what this administration has been doing. So they have carried out, in essence, what Kamala Harris promised when she was campaigning to be president back in 2019. And look, they will use children as the left always uses children in a very gross manner, but they don't care about the children when it comes down to it. Because they simply don't believe in immigration detention. They don't believe in borders. They want whoever wants to come in to come in, to not be held, to stay as long as they want, and then to give them taxpayer benefits, which hurts our economy terribly, and it's not sustainable. So,
Laura, isn't it also an incentive for more illegals to come? If they hear from their friends who've already come and they say, hey, come to America, all they do is cut you loose and give you a debit card and a plane ticket or a bus ticket. It's great. Come on down. They'll put you up in a hotel. They'll feed you. They'll provide you with medical care. It's so much better than Honduras or Guatemala. It's a gigantic incentive to come illegally, isn't it?
Yes. And I mean, before this administration, people would come if they knew that they could get in and be released, and if they could work. Now, tack on to those benefits what this administration has been giving, which is free plane tickets to wherever they want to go in the U.S., and then all sorts of welfare, driver's licenses, et cetera. And so, yes, the magnet pulling people here is even stronger, and it just begets more illegal immigration.
Let me ask you about another issue, and I kind of hinted at it a moment ago, and that is you take the adults into custody who claim to be the parents of the children. Is it always true that they are, in fact, the parents of the children? Or in some cases, are these people who are illegal aliens coming illegally into our country, committing a criminal act, and the kids are simply being dragged along with them, perhaps to be released to traffickers?
Yeah, we've got a lot of fraudulent families. Kids are being recycled because adults know that they will have an easier time to get in and to be released if they have children with them. And the last administration would do DNA testing if agents suspected these fraudulent family claims. And those DNA tests were effective. Of course, any good policy has been thrown out the window by this administration, which has stopped doing the DNA testing. So you get more kids that are recycled, and it's terrible. You watch these videos, these kids are drugged so that they're not responsive and so that they can't answer agent questions to say, no, this is not my uncle, father, whomever, I don't know this guy, and give up the scam. And so then those kids disappear into, again, more sex trafficking, slave-like labor, you name it.
And is it true that sometimes Homeland Security ends up releasing these kids to people who show up and say, well, I'm the aunt or uncle, I'm the family member, release the child to me? That happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, so unaccompanied children are supposed to be given to a sponsor, but when you have record numbers of children coming into the country, as we have under this administration, then Secretary Becerra of Health and Human Services has treated them like widgets and just get them processed as fast as possible to any sponsor. So these sponsors aren't vetted. They can be illegal aliens themselves. You could have multiple children in one household. You can have, you know, sex traffickers claiming to be sponsors. And there's been reports out now where they're not vetting these sponsors at all. So you're getting hundreds of addresses being reused. And it's just fraud across the board. And it always results in harm to the children.
And, of course, the border czar herself, Kamala Harris, during the 3.5 years she was the, you know, titular head of this effort, what exactly did she do, if anything, to address it that she can brag about today? Anything?
Well, she didn't, and that's why she's running away from it. And that's why she sent out talking points saying, I wasn't the border czar. But, you know, there's video of Biden appointing her to do two things, find the root causes and to deal with the flow of migrants coming from Northern Triangle countries and Mexico. And if you look at just those four countries, we're talking about 5 million people that have...
Unbelievable. 5 million people. That's Laura Reese, a senior research fellow at Heritage, former acting deputy chief of staff at Homeland Security. We'll be back in a moment. 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. When it comes...
Biden doesn't understand the connection between America's tanking economy and his own tax policies. Luckily, Senator John Kennedy set him straight.
If you believe that tax policy has nothing to do with the economy, then you're pretty much like a rock, only dumber.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. I got to tell you about a strange story. It actually connects what's going on in Israel and Gaza right now to workplaces right here in the United States. And if you wonder, well, how do you make that kind of connection? Let me tell you this. Imagine being a worker at a high-end company like Intel, you know, the folks who make the chips that go into the computers. And imagine being told you're working for somebody and your boss, he loves to see those social media posts that cheer the deaths of Israeli citizens and celebrate the Hamas terrorists. Now, I would think that most average Americans, most, common sense Americans would say, if your boss is out there liking posts about the deaths of people at the hands of terrorists and celebrating the Hamas terrorists, you need to find a new job. But let's say you want to stay at your current job. Well, that exactly describes a lawsuit that's been brought. It charges that his boss liking these expos that were cheering Hamas and celebrating the slaughter of Israelis, especially what happened on October the 7th of last year. So the guy who's been doing this, according to the lawsuit, is a guy by the name of Alaa Badr, and he is Intel's vice president of customer success. And he liked a bunch of posts on X, the former Twitter, that praised Hamas killing of Israeli armed forces, including an illustration of one of the Palestinian terror group's members putting his foot on the neck of an Israeli soldier lying face down in the dirt. Now, there's been a lawsuit brought that sues both this guy, Alaa Badr, and also Intel. So what did Intel do? The guy who complained happens to be an Israeli, happens to have friends and family members who are still in harm's way in Israel, but he's in New York City, and he gets fired. He gets fired because he complained and said, look, you've got me working for a guy who loves this. And for example, one of the posts from December 29th of last year, 4 days after Christmas, referred to the Hamas military wing known as the Al-Qassam Brigades. And this guy, Alaa Badr, vice president of customer success at Intel, praise be to God, the trampling was done. May God bless you, our Qassams. Well, the Qassams is the military wing of Hamas, a terrorist organization funded by Iran, which is itself funded by Joe Biden. Other of the posts, according to the lawsuit and reported by the New York Post, that were linked to Badr, this guy, this vice president at Intel, include an image of an Israeli soldier being strangled manually, as the police would say, strangled by hand, with the word Gaza written on it, and a post that used a fire emoji to cheer the bombing of a building that purportedly contained five, quote, Zionist soldiers who would soon be sent to hell. Badr, the vice president at Intel, vice president of customer success, who apparently still has his job, his alleged embrace of violent anti-Israel rhetoric, reports the New York Post, was incredibly disturbing for the unnamed engineer. They brought the lawsuit as a John Doe suit because he really doesn't want his name out there. He's a former IDF soldier from Israel, that's the Israel Defense Forces, whose immediate family still lives there and was injured and nearly killed when a Hamas missile tore through their building in February. Intel, it is said in the suit,
turned a blind eye to Botter's troubling social media activity. I have to wonder, I mean, when I post things on X almost every single day, I will like various posts. I'll write commentary on various posts. But believe me, when I do that, I understand that I'm representing not just an individual, me, but I'm also representing what you see and hear or hear on this radio show. And I'm aware that if I go out and start liking a bunch of terrorists, which I don't, that I'm going to get some feedback on that. I don't like terrorists. I'd like terrorists to be gone. But apparently, when the engineer went to his bosses and said, hey, this guy is liking a bunch of stuff about people being slaughtered, Intel, according to the suit, turned a blind eye to it, even after they were being told about it in late last year. And they assigned Botter, the guy who's doing all this stuff, liking all these posts, to become the Israeli engineer's direct manager at his New York City office in January of this year. He was, and here's a quote from the suit, he was reporting to and forced to interact daily with an individual who knew that he would celebrate the murder, even the burning alive, of his immediate family members. That's what the suit claims on behalf of the engineer. Again, he's only identified as John Doe. Botter, who is an Egyptian Muslim, publicly portrayed himself as somebody dedicated to bridging divides and advocating for cross-cultural competence between Muslims and non-Muslims. Well, that's the way he presented himself publicly. But as the suit says, his carefully crafted persona fell apart shortly after the October 7th slaughter in Israel, when the terrorists killed about 1,200 people and kidnapped another 250. And in the 10 months since then, the Israeli military has killed almost 40,000 Palestinians, including women and children, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. But by the way, the Gaza Health Ministry, you shouldn't necessarily trust them. They are part an agency of the Hamas-controlled government. So all I'm telling you is that all of that fighting, the war between Hamas, the terrorist organization, and Israel, and Hamas backed by Iran, famously with a lot of billions of dollars thanks to Joe Biden, that some of that stuff can come home very quickly when people in this country, especially people in positions of responsibility, as this lawsuit alleges about Alaa Badar, this guy at Intel, it can come right home to where you work. It can come right home to where you live, to the point where if you don't go along with it or turn a blind eye yourself, imagine if this Israeli engineer or this, you know, this Israeli engineer who's former IDF, now living and working in the United States, he's told, you've got a boss. The boss likes this stuff. You need to simply ignore it, because if you don't, then you may end up out of a job. He ends up getting fired. His boss continues on as Intel's vice president of customer success. And by the way, we will put a request out to Intel. I would love to talk to somebody who would speak for the company and be able to explain, are you willing to let people within your ranks do this? And I think it's a reasonable question. I mean, these days, if somebody were to put up, say, some stupid comments about the Ku Klux Klan, another terrorist organization, or any other terrorist organization in the United States, and your boss starts retweeting those and liking those posts, do you have a right as an individual worker to say, I don't like this, what this guy is doing is wrong, and he represents Intel? I'm aware that I represent the Lars Larson Show, but that's all I represent, and that's my company. But I represent every single radio station that carries this show. And I want to make it clear that when I like things on social media, I have to take responsibility for that. And so does everybody else, including Alaa Badar, Intel's vice president of customer success. They'll probably say there's a lawsuit, so we can't talk about it. Your calls are coming up at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Yeah.
sometimes the truth is awkward.
You know what the Muslims call the Jews in the Quran? The children of Israel. Well, this is awkward.
Now, more truth from Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Our X poll today goes this way. Should gun carry permits be limited to only those who actually live in a state? Now, there are a number of states in the United States where you can get a carry permit, and it's good for a number of states. In fact, if you get a Nevada or a Utah permit, Arizona or Utah permit, those are good in about 30 of the 50 states. But there are a number of states, usually the blue states, where if you get a carry permit, it's good in that state and not much of any good anywhere else in America. There's not much reciprocity at all. And in fact, it was one of the big disappointments I had during Donald Trump's first term in office is that he had said he was going to seek concealed carry reciprocity nationwide. And I thought it was going to happen. And here's why. Because there was a bill that had been introduced in the House of Representatives. And remember that Donald Trump's first 2 years as president of the United States, he had a Republican Senate by majority. He had a Republican House by majority. And the bill that was introduced in the House, the winning number in the House of Representatives is one vote more than half. So you need 218 votes out of the 435. The math is very easy. The bill had 228 co-sponsors, which meant the minute they introduced it, it would pass the House, and then it would go to the Senate, and the Senate being a Republican majority, it would have it should have had a relatively easy time passing. So what did Paul Ryan do? Paul Ryan has been a Rhino Republican for a long time. Now he sits on the board of directors at Fox News, another reason not to like Fox News very much, and he decided he wasn't even going to put it to a vote, even though it was a bill that would very easily simply pass and be able to be sent to the Senate. The president had already said he was in favor of the idea. The House had 228 co-sponsors for the bill. They should have done it. They should have done it in about 10 minutes. Pass the House, throw it to the Senate, take a vote. And at that point, if you say, well, what if some of those Republican senators wanted to vote no on concealed carry reciprocity? Well, they could do it, but then they'd have to face the voters later on. Well, today is interesting because New York State and New York City in particular have been particularly antithetical to the idea of concealed carry. And yet now the New York City Police Department has adopted an emergency rule that allows non-residents of New York State to apply for concealed carry permits. Now, why would New York City adopt such a rule? Because I think the cops have decided that it has become such a dangerous city that they have to allow law-abiding people to be armed. So our question today on X, should gun carry permits be limited to only those who live in a particular state? California is that way, for example. I would say no. It should not be limited just to state residents. It should be available to all. And frankly, if there was any justice, we'd have concealed carry reciprocity nationwide. Maybe we can get that starting in January. Let me turn to Romina Baccia, who's Director of Budget and Entitlements at the Cato Institute. Romina, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about this because President Trump, you know, the Democrats are constantly trying to say Donald Trump is going to hurt Social Security. And yet recently he said that he wants to eliminate taxes on Social Security payments. And that is something that would benefit to a greater or lesser extent, about 67 million Americans. What else should we know about the implications of that? And why do we charge income taxes on money that's coming from the government, and then you have to pay taxes back to the government because you received it?
It does seem rather odd. However, the reason that there are taxes on a certain portion of Social Security benefits, because it's not all Social Security benefits, it's up to 85%, and only for certain higher income earners. The reason for that is that when employers pay payroll taxes on behalf of their employees, they are able to take a tax deduction for the amount of the payroll tax that they pay. And so asking beneficiaries or retirees then to pay income taxes on that amount is not double taxation because it wasn't taxed in the first place. And the reason that it's 85% is because the Social Security Administration performed a calculation trying to figure out what portion of the income that retirees receive from Social Security came from their own contributions versus from the government or really from other taxpayers, because the government only gets its money from taxpayers, or from their employers who got a deduction, and this is how they came up with the 85% amount. So there's a lot of misunderstanding about this taxation of Social Security income. It is not double taxation, as many people believe, and there's a reason for why it's structured in the way that it is. We also need to keep in mind that one of the reasons for this tax, it was imposed because the Social Security Trust Fund was running out of money in the early 80s. And so this was one way to share the burden of funding Social Security, to lift some of the burden of the younger generation and share it with the older generation, who on average tend to have higher net worth, and in some cases even higher incomes than those people who pay for the Social Security benefits.
Now, when somebody pays income, I don't get Social Security, but when somebody gets Social Security and they end up paying income taxes, but that money goes back to the Treasury. It doesn't go just to Social Security, or am I wrong about that?
So a portion goes to Social Security and another portion goes to Medicare, because Medicare Part A is also funded from payroll taxes. But all the money just goes to the Treasury. And then the Treasury sort of keeps a ledger for what money is put to be allocated to Medicare and Social Security. But you're right, all the money flows in and out of the Treasury, and everything else is just intergovernmental accounting, just, you know, paper and digits moving around.
And I would imagine that most of the people who'd end up paying taxes on Social Security would pay it if they're still working in retirement or still making money from investments in retirement. So how big an impact would this have on the federal budget if we were to say, okay, Social Security benefits are not taxable for income tax, and we're not going to collect a tax on it? How much would that cost the federal government in uncollected taxes? Do we know?
The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget has run some numbers on there. It is pretty sizable. It's close to $2 trillion over the next 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And they estimate that it would, in terms of how much money it is on an annual basis compared to what Social Security spends, it's about 5% or 5 cents of every Social Security benefit come from this income tax on benefits. And Social Security spends right now $1.4 trillion a year, and is projected to spend more than $2 trillion a year by the end of the decade. So it is a sizable sum. It is a significant, and it's also what we like to call regressive. That means it's a policy that would actually return more money to higher income retirees. It wouldn't have much of an effect on lower income retirees, but this idea that at a time when we have massive federal government deficits, that we should be giving tax cuts to wealthier individuals.
Just call them the rich. It's the rich, right? So the rich would benefit more. The poor probably not benefit much of anything at all. Now, Romina, thank you very much. That's Romina Baccia, who's Director of Budget and Entitlements at the Free Market Cato Institute. We appreciate your time. I'll get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk. But fair warning, if you're listening to this show, you're likely on the FBI's most wanted list. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday live on the Radio Northwest Network. And I guess Tim Walz has decided to double down on his military background, effectively saying, and I'll quote from what he had to say today, Tim Walz is the governor of Minnesota, that's without a doubt, former member of Congress from Minnesota, now vice presidential running mate of Kamala Harris. What else do we know about him? He served in the National Guard for 24 years. He made a commitment to serve in the National Guard for 27 years. Did he finish the 27 years? He did not. Was he deployed overseas? Yeah, he took a deployment to Italy. Not a war zone, not now. Not for about the last 75 years, but did he take a deployment to Iraq? No, when he found out he was being deployed to Iraq, he decided that he would quit the National Guard, and some of his fellow service members don't think much of that. But Walz came out today. He's on the campaign trail, his first solo event, and I believe it was in Los Angeles, but he gave a speech. Yeah, it was in Los Angeles, and he said that he's proud. I'm damn proud of my service to this country. It's not about your service. It's about you claiming the rank of command sergeant major that you did not hold when you retired from the service. It is one where he planned to become a command sergeant major. He began to take the training to be a command sergeant major, but he never finished. And yet since then, he has described himself, and we played the soundbite of him doing it, as retired command sergeant major Tim Walz. He is not. He is retired Master Sergeant Tim Walz. And you say, well, a rank here, a rank there, what's the big deal? He's actually thrown down in this speech he gave today in L.A., I firmly believe you should never denigrate another person's service record. To anyone brave enough to put on the uniform, including my opponent, he's talking about J.D. Vance, I have just a few simple words. Thank you for your service and sacrifice. I don't think somebody's denigrating your record if they say you never held that rank. You claimed a rank that you did not hold when you retired from the National Guard. Thank you for your service in the National Guard. But claiming a rank you didn't hold is stolen valor. It is a federal crime in the United States. In any case, let's go to Lewis, who's calling in on the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Lewis, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars, I had a quick question. So I'm a son of a municipality worker. He's been with the local municipality here for about 16 years. Yeah. He's actually on a convention. I know you're not big on unions, but he's at a convention for his union down in Southern California right now from the area. Yeah. And him and his friends have been telling me that there is a lot of political stuff going on there as far as Kamala Harris. They've had a lot of stuff for her. Before certain speeches, they'll have political ads for her, but not for the other party, which we agree with. And I was wondering if that is that actually a thing they're allowed to do with public officials at conventions, spending the money from our cities here to push a certain agenda on these public officials just one way at these conventions? I don't think right.
Short answer is yes, because unions are private organizations. They can do what they want. You know, I mean, my radio show is a private organization. I have First Amendment rights, so I'm protected from the government interfering. But if I want to go on the radio and talk about a candidate like President Trump, then I'm, you know, I'm allowed to do that. And the government is not allowed to interfere. So a union can do that. Now, the question I'd have is, Lewis, here's what's bizarre. I think the latest polls show that a majority of, say, United Auto Workers union members plan to vote for Donald Trump. And yet the union that claims to represent them says we're endorsing Kamala Harris. We're opposing Donald Trump. In fact, as of today or as of yesterday, they are suing Donald Trump. So what does it say when the union that you pay money to represent you misrepresents you that way? That's a question that union members ought to be asking. Let's go to dear Alma, who's one of my favorite naysayers. Alma, welcome to the program. What do we disagree about?
Hi, my love. How are you today?
I'm doing very, very well today. I'm looking forward to Donald Trump's win in November. Aren't you?
Oh, that's not going to happen. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. You know what I'm calling? Donald Trump ain't served in nothing. And he got to know nobody who didn't serve in the United States Army. My brother did. They can't talk about the next their fellow man. It's terrible if they do.
And, well, can I ask you a question?
Well, We're not going to let him get swim voted like they did John Kerry.
Can I ask you a question, Alma? What was the highest rank that your brother achieved?
I really don't know. He's dead. He's been deceased.
I'm sorry to hear that.
All I know is he served.
But let's say he finished out as a corporal. Would it have been right for him to run around telling people that he was a sergeant in the Army if he only got to corporal?
Look, listen, Mark, we had a running joke in our family. My sisters used to say, "Look, brother, weren't you an ambulance driver or something?" He said, "No, I was a sergeant." So he played around with it. Why play? If you can say that, and we all knew it was a running joke. And
well, but if he got to the rank of sergeant, would it have been okay for him to call himself lieutenant because he didn't get to that rank?
When you serve your country, you can call yourself anything to me, Lord.
Alma, the law doesn't agree with you because the law says if you were a sergeant and you run around telling people that you were a lieutenant or a captain or a colonel or a general, you're not allowed to do that. It's against the law and for good reason. It's called stolen valor. But God bless you, Alma. Love getting your naysayer calls now and then. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. The Lars